Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
The Longbow is the key to understanding how and why the English won so many crushing battlefield victories during the Hundred Years' War. The key to the English success with the longbow lay in the fact that their archers were highly skilled and practiced even when they weren't on campaign.
In April 2009, he was playing the Game King video poker machine at the Fremont Casino in downtown Las Vegas. And he was trying to change his bet and hit some wrong buttons. And all of a sudden, his machine was indicating that he had won over $1,000 without even placing a bet.
You had accepted an offer to play at the University of Florida before the Reds drafted you, is that correct?
Right, yeah. Florida is the school I committed to.
Yeah.
Welcome to this week's episode of the WVXU Discovery Podcast, Start Here. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Get set for a quick overview and sample of three podcasts today, two national and one locally produced, to help you navigate the ever-growing world of the podcast phenomenon. Plus, we're introducing the all-new Start Here Blast weekly e-newsletter. You'll get a personalized email with a podcast we feature on Start Here. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here Blast email from the bottom of the page. Also, now you can rate Start Here on iTunes. And if you're a fan, a 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. So don't forget to rate us on iTunes today. And now, with special thanks for technical assistance from Cincinnati Public Radio's Jim Nolan and writing research and curation support by Connor Eldridge, it's time to Start Here. Well, the past is all around us. Even a sentence as simple as, today is August 21st, is chock full of history. Like, who decided this month would be called August? How do we decide on 12 months a year? Well, Wondery's Tides of History podcast is dedicated to answering these kinds of questions. Host Patrick Wayman sets out to understand why our world is the way it is, how it got here, and where it's going. Tides of History employs expert sound design and meticulously researched information to immerse you in the past while keeping an eye towards the future. In a chronological series recounting everything from the rise of Rome to Black Death, Patrick creates a framework for modern understanding with thoughtful and focused analysis of events of the past. Join Tides of History as you explore the complex ebbs and flows of history that led to this point right now, today. This is from an episode of Tides of History exploring the lesser-known but greatly important Hundred Years' War. The episode documents the sustained hostility between France and England, investigating how this moment in history reverberated around the world. In this snippet, Patrick examines Henry V's new approach to conquest and the secret weapon that was the cause of many crushing victories for the English army.
Most of them, around 4/5 of the total force, would be archers equipped with the lethal English longbow. It's worth stopping for a moment to chat about the longbow, which we'll discuss in more depth next week. The longbow is the key to understanding how and why the English won so many crushing battlefield victories during the Hundred Years' War. In essence, there's nothing complicated about it. It's a simple bow made of stiff yew wood, not a composite bow like those the Huns and Turks of the steppe used from horseback. The key to the English success with the longbow lay in the fact that their archers were highly skilled and practiced even when they weren't on campaign. They had all been brought up from youth to draw a bow. The bows themselves projected arrows with tremendous force, enough to go through all but the most expensive and advanced armor. Finally, on the battlefield, English commanders found ways to use them in massed numbers to fill the air with thousands of lethal arrows in rapid succession. So those archers were the core of the army that Henry V brought to France in 1415. But Henry also brought something else. Gunpowder artillery to batter down the walls of towns and castles. This new campaign wasn't going to be a chevauchée, a long-distance raid. We talked about those last time, and they had dominated English strategy in the 14th century, for pretty good reasons. Instead, Henry V was planning a war of conquest. It would be tremendously expensive, something like £45,000 for every 3 months of active campaigning. That money was to be collected from brutally high new taxes and pawning practically every possession the king owned, down to his clothing and his silverware. If it failed, Henry and the English crown would be bankrupt. No pressure, right? All through the summer of 1415, Henry V played for time. He listened to offers from French ambassadors and led them on. He made them think that he was open to negotiation. But all of that was nothing more than skillful politics. By the middle of August, Henry's army had landed in Normandy, in northern France. Again, this was no campaign of dressed-up thievery and arson. It was a campaign of conquest. Henry intended to take and rule Normandy, not burn it to the ground. He kept tight control of his army and forbade wanton destruction. Winning hearts and minds was essential to his plan. The small port city of Harfleur was the initial target, and Henry put his gunpowder artillery to good use. They blasted holes in the town walls and forced its surrender in late September of 1415. The defenders of Harfleur had held out for more than a month in the face of the siege. They sent messengers begging for relief from the French crown. No help had been forthcoming, despite their best efforts to assemble an army and repel the English. It was a huge blow to the shaky prestige of the royal family and their tenuous authority. Still, the victory at Harfleur had cost Henry dearly. More than half of the army he'd brought was either dead or too sick to fight. His supply lines were stretched thin. His plan to take the whole coast of Normandy, which had looked pretty doable a few months before, obviously wasn't going to happen now. The reasonable course would have been to hold Harfleur, retreat to England, and try again the next year. But that's not what Henry did. Instead, he marched down the coast toward his safe haven of Calais. It would be a 150-mile quick march across the French countryside with a planned time on the road of just 8 days.
Tides of History from Wondery. You can get a complete picture of how history has shaped our world today with Tides of History, available now on WVXU's Podcast Central. The internet is a big place. That's why they call it the World Wide Web. So it makes sense that the web can spawn some pretty crazy stories. Enter Darknet Diaries. This new addition to the Podcast Central Library tells the tall but true tales of the darker side of the internet. Online banking heists, video game pyramid schemes, and more true stories await you at the virtual pages of the Darknet Diaries. Host Jack Reesider creates an atmosphere of intrigue and crypticism that perfectly accentuates the content and might make you think twice before punching your social security number into the shady online shopping website. Here's a recent episode of Darknet Diaries called Jackpot. The episode tells the story of a gambling addict who discovers a bug in a video poker machine that lets him win excessive amounts of money. What could go wrong? Here in this snippet, Jack explains the man who discovered the bug and just how he did it. What could go wrong? In this clip, Jack introduces the man who discovered the bug and just how he did it.
John Cain is a virtuoso pianist. Now at 50 years old, he's been an expert pianist for the last 40 years, playing for large audiences, teaching piano, selling his recordings. He lives in Las Vegas and runs a management consulting firm, which claims to have 30 of the Fortune 100 companies as his clients. By 2005, John's business was lucrative. He was living in a large house in the northeast end of Vegas. In it, he had 3 Steinway grand pianos, and one of his hobbies was model railroad trains. One of his spare bedrooms showcased an entire miniature town with a model train running through it with exquisite attention to detail. But besides loving the piano and building model trains, he also loved the thrill of gambling. This went on for years, but by 2006, he was severely addicted. That year, he blew through $500,000 in gambling, often at the Boulder Station Casino. His favorite game was video poker. Video poker is a simple yet exciting game. You're given 5 cards, with the option of throwing out any of those cards to get a new one, and the goal is to get the best hand possible. One can win anywhere from the 1 cent you put in the machine to thousands of dollars on the jackpot. John spent a large amount of time playing a video poker game called Game King, made by IGT. This is the most popular video slot in Vegas. It contains such games as Deuces Wild, Jacks Are Better, Triple Play, and Bonus Poker. His pianist hands would grace the buttons of the machine with style and elegance. We play for hours at a time and thousands of games of poker. But one day, something weird happened. In April 2009, he was playing the Game King video poker machine at the Fremont Casino in downtown Las Vegas. And he was trying to change his bet and hit some wrong buttons. And all of a sudden, his machine was indicating that he had won over $1,000. without even placing a bet. He knew right away this wasn't right, and the game malfunctioned on him. His payout was so big, the casino attendant had to deliver it by hand. He told the attendant he thinks that there was an error, but the attendant just thought he was joking and paid it anyways. He tried replicating the issue. He spent hours more playing and trying to make this strange behavior happen again. John phoned a friend. Years earlier, John had a gambling friend named Andre Nestor. Andre and John met through an AOL chat room for Vegas locals. They shared the same addiction to gambling and would often sit side by side playing various slots. Andre was 13 years younger than John and worked answering phones for a bank. He made considerably less than John, but still managed to lose about $20,000 a year gambling for the 6 years he lived in Vegas. After that, he called it quits and moved to a quiet town in Pennsylvania, where he'd only occasionally play the lottery. And Andre had been living in Pennsylvania for the last 2 years. John called Andre and told him about this bug he found in the video poker machine and that he thinks he might be able to replicate it. Andre was immediately interested and drove to the airport that night and waited all night until the next flight to Vegas. John picked Andre up at McCarran Airport, grabbed breakfast, and they went right back to the Fremont and sat side by side on the two Game King video poker machines. John had some ideas on how to trigger the bug, but he didn't know for sure how to reliably do it. He explained to Andre what he thought was the method, and the two got to work looking for the bug. They would try various betting strategies, different games, combination of button pushing, and different bet levels. And every now and then they were able to trigger the bug, but it wasn't consistent. The game they were playing would let them bet anywhere from 1 cent to 50 cents a hand. The bug they found would let them change their bet after the win. So they could play for hours losing only pennies, but then when a big hand would show up, like four of a kind, they could change their bet to 50 cents. And immediately, they'd get the winnings for a 50-cent wager instead of a 1-cent wager. This would result in thousands of dollars for a win like this. After hours of playing side by side, they figured out the exact sequence that would need to be done for an extra large payout to happen. They hit numerous jackpots that night and left to have a celebratory dinner.
Dark Net Diaries. To find out what happened to John and hear many more stories of the dark side of the internet, check out Darknet Diaries. That's available right now on WVXU's Podcast Central. We are well into the dog days of summer, and that means baseball, of course, is in full swing. For you, if you're a Red fan, Podcast Central has recently added a great local podcast that'll keep you up to date on your favorite hometown team. It's called Red Leg Nation Radio, and it's your new go-to podcast for all things Reds. Get expert insight into the team's best players and prospects, postseason predictions, in-depth game analysis, and more, with player and coach interviews, as well as chats with experts from around the city. Host and creator Chad Dotson has crafted the ultimate Reds fan podcast. Here's an episode of Red Legs Nation Radio featuring an old interview with Red star Jesse Winker. The interview was done by Red Leg Nation back when Jesse was a rising Reds prospect, and it's a great opportunity to hear what kind of player Jesse wanted to be, knowing how far he's come. And since it's old, it probably also explains some of the very tough-to-listen-to audio quality here. They were just getting started. In this clip, Jesse describes the draft day and what it was like for him, and then a University of Florida commit.
You had accepted an offer to play at University of Florida before the Reds drafted you, is that correct?
Right, yeah. Florida is the school I committed to.
Yeah. Tell us about draft day and the draft day experience for you.
Oh, you know... Well, that ties into it being my dream my whole life to go play professionally. You're thinking, I was sitting at my dinner table, my whole family was in town, and, you're thinking, what team's it going to be, what spot, this and that. And what I knew for sure is I just wanted to go play. And so I was like, God, I just can't wait to go play. And when the Reds took me, I just hit the floor and, I kind of forgot what happened. Everyone was just jumping around in excitement. And I was just, I was very emotional. I was like, oh my God, hugging everybody and, just the perfect fit. And I was just so honored that the Reds took me. And, it was just a dream come true.
What other teams had looked at you or had talked to you?
We were in touch with a lot of different teams. I kind of forget, to be honest with you.
Yeah, too many of them, huh?
not to say, I mean, you know,
no, I know.
You have in-home visits with every team. You know, a lot of teams came to my games and came to my batting practices I had before the game and stuff. So, you know, you were kind of just in touch with a lot of different teams. But what a perfect fit with the Reds. You know, it was just awesome that it happened.
Were you pretty sure the Reds were going to be the team that took you, or was it still up in the air on the day of the draft?
The day of the draft, you know, I really didn't have any idea who was going to take me. And then once, you know, pick 49 came around, I got the phone call, and I was just sitting there waiting. And, you know, once you hear your name called, you know, it's just the best feeling ever.
So once you were picked, and you're picked as a first rounder, and there aren't many first round picks that don't sign, you know, but was there some discussion about whether you'd go to Florida, or was it a foregone conclusion that you were going to play ball right now?
I wanted to start my career absolutely 100%. There was, you know, this is the story. Like, I got drafted on a Monday. I graduated. Like, I walked in graduation on Tuesday. I signed that week, and I flew out Friday.
Wow.
I was ready to go play, and I wanted to, I wanted to get my career started and go experience minor league life and, you know, start it up.
A clip from Red Leg Nation Radio. For your one-stop shop on the latest Reds news, check out Red Leg Nation Radio, now available on WVXU's Podcast Central. It's chart time. Our weekly look at the chart toppers from the Apple Podcast Charts, as provided by iTunescharts.net. Well, last week we featured the number one podcast, Slow Burn, returning to the top with their new season that features a deep dive on the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And since then, a new podcast has also hit number one. It's called Rise Together, hosted by husband and wife team Dave and Rachel Hollis. It's practical advice to help you and your partner to be the best versions of yourself. That's the new number one, Rise Together, on the Apple Podcast Charts. That wraps up this episode of Start Here, WVXU's Discovery Podcast. And speaking of discovery, astronomical discovery, that is, you want to check out our newest original podcast, Looking Up, with Dean Regas and Anna Heyman. Dean's the outreach astronomer at the Cincinnati Observatory and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers and author of the book Facts from Space. Anna's the observatory's director of development with an innate curiosity about the cosmos. That's Looking Up. Now at WVXU.org. And if you're turning into a podcast junkie and just can't get enough, try these two new discovery resources. NPR's The Big Listen with Laura Ober. You get an audio peek into great storytelling podcasts. And for a more blog-like written review and recommendation, NPR has Earbud.fm. They use unique categories to help you discover podcasts with things like advice, do it like a lady, and big ideas. And of course, Jim Nolan, Kevin Reynolds, and the WVXU staff feature our favorites on Podcast Central at WVXU.org. That's where we'll add your recommendations if you just email us at podcast@WVXU.org or call 513-294-8030 and leave us a voicemail. I'm Trip Eldridge for WVXU, and thank you for choosing to start here.